I come here today, recognize that I haven't done a lot of speaking. I've been producing babies, and I'm 47 years old. Was told after I had my son, who's now 16 years old, that I could never have any more children, that I'd be too high a risk and not even to consider it. I could never get off medications. This is just the way it was going to be. And so in my 40s, I now have a beautiful 6-year-old and a 3-year-old, both of them born at home and with the help of my husband. The first child born, I almost didn't have the midwife, Megan. She was late, and she came an hour before Leah came. But it's wonderful. I can't tell you. It's very humbling. And my life is sweet. It's precious. And it's so different. It's so different than the life I once lived. I'm humbled to share with you some dear friends. And the reason why I wrote the book was in the beginning of the book, it shows a dedication to 6 individuals who I knew personally who took their own lives. And the last person that had killed themselves, I was like, oh, what can I do? What can I do about this? This is just wrong. This is just very, very wrong. What can we do here? And it was like, I had to write this booklet. And so I dedicated to people that who were very dear to me. And this is Debbie. And Debbie was a real sweet gal. She was kind of, she lost both of her parents, and so she only had a brother. And Debbie was just a real sweet gal. It was real unfortunate. And I was really sad when she hung herself in her own home. Heidi nearly just broke me up. I mean, Heidi had the worst case of tardive dyskinesia I've ever seen. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a side effect of medications that they use for schizophrenia. And it causes real rigidity. And so she would, you know, she'd stand at our house, and she just would go around like this, and it was like, oh, Heidi, you're just living. This is hell. This is hell. But she juiced, and she stayed with us, and it was very unfortunate. She left us, and then 6 months later, she was institutionalized, and she got out. She lived with her mother, and it happened to be on my son's birthday. She shot herself in the head, and her mother retrieved her body. I say these things because mental illness is a disease. It is a very disturbing, very traumatic way to live. No one can understand the turmoil of having a mental illness like those who have endured it themselves. There's reasons why people kill themselves, whether they're being deceived or lied to within themselves, or the torment that they have to go through. It's real. It's real. And it needs to be addressed, and I believe it needs to be addressed responsibly. My journey with bipolar pretty much began when I was 18 years old. I'm bringing up all these traumas, not to sadden you, but just to say we're in this life, and it has heartaches. And when I was 18, I had first my stepfather died in a boat with my mother. They were fishing in a lake in Kentucky, and he died of a massive heart attack. My mom had to row to shore and get him, and he died. And then Billy Engle, I don't know if any of you from Cincinnati might have known Billy, but he was a brilliant young man, and I'd gone through kindergarten through high school with him, and a week before graduation or sometime around there, he ignited himself at school and killed himself. And then my sister, my beloved sister, this is Rana, and she died in a motorcycle crash. And she had been an artist at Les Beaux-Arts in Paris, France. She's a highly talented artist, and she came here to raise more money to go back to Europe to finish her studies in Paris, France, and she had bought a cheap motorcycle, and so she was hit on Madison Road and died instantly. There were other traumatic events that year, including 3 other deaths, 1 other suicide igniting. She copycatted Billy. She was another neighbor that lived down the street, and you know, just as a young woman, just turning 18 and graduating from school, it was just overbearing. Now, when we look at what causes disease, we can recognize that bipolar just doesn't happen overnight. Neither does cancer. I mean, you don't just wake up and one morning you're sick. You know, disease starts at a molecular level, day by day, and choice by choice. So, yes, I had a very traumatic year. But 1 year prior to that, I had dental problems. I was a sugarholic. As a kid, I was the baby of the family. My grandmother was a baker. She'd make these wonderful cakes, and I'd be the one that could take my finger and get the icing down the bottom. Nobody would ever say anything because, oh, that's Susie's little trademark on all the, you know, family birthday cakes and things. And so anyway, I paid for it dearly because when I was 17 years old, I had to have 10 root canals and 10 caps all done. When I was 22, I found out that all 10 of those caps and root canals were all done improperly, and I had to have them redone again. And just, I was seeing some grimaces there. I had to have them redone again at 38. So I always say, my husband doesn't buy me diamonds. He buys me teeth, you know? It's just like, yes, these teeth are you know, my diamonds. And someday I'll probably have them all pulled because I still have some mercury in there, and I know the dangers and harms of that chemical effect. So... you know, out of all that trauma and different things, Rana's death, my sister, was especially hard. It was hard for me to let go of her. It took about 20 years to say, okay, you know, I'm living this new life. The Color of My Heart books were an inspiration that I had to do as a tribute. When my grandmother died, I inherited $10,000, and I took $1,000, and I had Emerson Quillen make up this lovely book, and then we just passed out 1,000 of these books. Just I thought, I'm just going to give them away. And it kind of took people aback. It's like, what? Something is free? You know, it's like, and I just started receiving all these checks, and I got like all these $10 checks, and thank you so much for this book. Thank you. And it was just really sweet. And so this is very much part of our ministry. This is very dear to my heart. This book's gone all over the world on different mission trips and different things. And it's just very special. If you have a little one in your life that you think it would touch, I'd be honored to share these with you. It's something that inspired me to keep going. I wanted to give you a little bit of background. I really was very, very sick. My mother was told that I would need to be institutionalized the rest of my life, about 22. I was put into Roman State Institute. And I was, you know, I mean, it's barbaric to think that here in America, the mentally ill are treated. I think sometimes when I've come here before and it's of animal rights, it's like, well, let's talk about human rights. It's amazing. It's really amazing. You know, you go into a mental hospital, you think a hospital would be a safe place, but I'm here to say that, you know, to be shackled and to be put into a room in the dark and to be laid into a bed and unattended where you can't move, you can't urinate, you can't have any comfort. You're in a room with, I mean, I just remember this vividly. It's like post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, when I think of the number of times I've been hospitalized and really inhumane treatment. Now, I'm not saying that my behavior didn't warrant it, but I'm just saying there's got to be a better way. There's just got to be a better way. I was on medications, probably tried every different type, lithium and Depakote and Clonopin and Ambien and you name it, and I probably have tried it. Now, in my teenage years, I did, you know, probably it was considered self-medicating. I did get into drugs and stuff. So really, I guess most of my life I was under the influence of something. And I have to say, now I'm homeschooling my six-year-old, which means my three-year-old is right there with me. And I've got a 16-year-old. I've got a husband, and I've got, you know, a cat that wants to try to get in, and a dog that likes to pee right by the toilet, you know. And I'm living such a charmed life. We've got a farm in Walton, Kentucky, and, you know, it's like, oh, my goodness. I never would have thought my life would have changed so immensely. At our church, on the wall above the pastor, there's a there's an expression, and it says, expect winds of change. So to anyone who does struggle with depression, and I know the heartache of being in an existence that just seems so profoundly trapping and stifling, things do change. Things do change. And there is hope. And that doesn't mean that one has to be on medication the rest of their lives, or that one needs extensive therapy. And one needs a lot of money in order to pay for these different therapies. Somebody did an interview on me and they said, could you come up with like how much money? I was like, no, I couldn't. You know, between dental expenses and psychiatric bills. And I was like, no, I could be so wealthy. So yeah, it's just amazing. It's amazing. Before I got into Whole Health, I'm a student. When I had my girls, I mean, I just had my stack of books, and I read everything I could on home births. And so I just, that's my nature. I love to study. I love to really delve into something. When something I'm impassioned by, I'll just get a lot of books. So before I got into Whole Health, I was reading, you know, books like The Unquiet Mind by Kay Jamison or Christiane Northrup's My Body, My Health, I think that's the name of it. And so these different books that I would read, but you know, toxic psychiatry and all those things helped me. I was always searching. And so when I got down to the end of my rope, I was in the hospital, and I was in a day program. There were two main events that really turned me around. And the one was being highly suicidal. I was in a day program, and they wanted to do electroshock therapy on me. And I came home one day. My husband, you know, he had worked for Toyota, worked 14-hour days, and I had a 5-year-old son at the time, and God bless Benjamin. He came in this life to teach me about love. He's precious to me. But at the time, it was just more than I could bear. I just wasn't coping with life well. And I had gone into the garage of our house, and I, you know, put the car on, and I was in the car inhaling the fumes like an idiot. And it wasn't working. And so I went inside, and I called my dad. And I said, Dad, this is crazy. I can't get this to work. And he said, Susie, he said, what you need to do is get a hose and put it up on the exhaust and use some tape here and do the thing. And he gave me a step-by-step description on how to do it. Now, he said, no, let me tell you, I'd be really sorry if you did this. He already lost one daughter, so the son of a guy said, I'd be really sorry if you did this, but this is how you do it. You're asking me, and I'm going to tell you. So I got off the phone, and I said, you know, daggone it, and I probably was not that. And it struck me, because how many times I had been institutionalized, how many times I had scared the wits out of people who loved me dearly, who didn't want to see me check out, and who went ahead and put me in the hospital against my will just to say, Susie, I love you, and I don't want you to go. But you know what? That was the first time ever that anybody said, you are responsible. You have a choice. You can live or you can die. And it was like, wow. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I literally went out to our back porch overlooking the golf course. We had a beautiful view. I mean, I've been so blessed. And I was ready to check out. I had a beautiful 5-year-old son, a husband who loved me, who was making, you know, wonderful income. And we lived off the golf course. And I mean, my gosh, I was so blessed. And I was ready to check out. It's like, so I went on the porch, and I literally just got on my knees, and I said, God, I want to know you. I want to know you. I'm just going to stick around. I have screwed this up. I'm not sure how to do this life. I've messed this up. I'm not where I'd like to be. But I'm going to stay here, and I'm going to use the rest of my time here on Earth to find out who you are. I'm going to get to know you. But do you know, it wasn't, about a week later, we started going back to church. Do you know that that pastor at Southland Christian Church down in Lexington, Kentucky, was talking to me? There was an audience of probably, they have like 2,000 or 3,000 people. He talked to me personally every week. Every week I went, that guy would get up there on stage. I'd be way back here, and I'd hear him talk. And he'd be like, oh, you're talking to me. It's when I stopped wearing mascara. Because every week I just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And do you know, too, a little back step here, I'd received a letter from a friend because I had tried everything. I had tried Tai Chi and Qigong and acupuncture and, oh my gosh, box flower essence. And I was going to Chicago and getting my supplements. And I was just, quest. I'm going to get well. And it helped. There's things that you can do to relieve symptoms. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking any of those things. But when I started realizing, when I got this letter from a friend, she said, Susie, and she loved me dearly, I could tell. She wrote this letter. I wish I had saved it because it's about a 6-page letter, real small print. She said, I never hear you talk about the Lord anymore. I hear you talk about everything else but the Lord. You are searching for all this stuff, and you never talk about the Lord. And do you know, that pierced my heart more than anything. I was like, wow, she is so right. And that's when we went back to church. And that's when the pastor just kept talking directly to me. There was 1,000 other people. They were probably talking to him too, but I took it as my own little messages. My husband had worked for Toyota for 12, 13 years. He was climbing the corporate ladder. Japan was recognizing him. He was destined to be the future president of Toyota. He was one of the youngest group leaders, and he had 6 promotions, and he kept climbing. Every time he got a promotion, I overdosed. So, people didn't know, what kind of turmoil Mike was living in. It was like, I don't want to go home and tell my wife that I got another promotion. This is going to be the end of her. But basically, that was how it was. Isn't it pathetic? So finally, Michael got enough nerve, and we left. He left, and we went down, and we became house parents at a boys' home down in Jacksonville, Florida, at a place called Safe Harbor. They had delinquent teenage boys, and we took our 7-year-old boy. We packed up our golf course house, and our families were going, "What the heck are you doing?" And it was, believe me, it was a much more emphatic said, they took us out to dinner, and it's like, we know she's crazy, Mike, but what about you, and she's got an effect on you that this isn't good. So we went down there, and just step by step, things just happened. I had to have my teeth redone, and I got this dentist who was just lovely, and it took 6 months to have my teeth redone again. And then we got fired at the boys' home. It wasn't because of Mike. And I know I've made my husband's life very interesting, and he's very grateful for me. And then it's really sweet. I mean, he is like a bowl of vanilla ice cream, and I am like every variety. And it works well, and I'm so grateful for him and all that we've gone through together. We saw a poster for George Malcomus. He's going to be speaking here on June 17th, and spread the word. I mean, George is great. And that's what planted the seed for me. I saw this poster at a health food store, and it said, you don't have to be sick. And it was, yeah, thank you, good, okay. I went to this conference with my son and my husband, and I listened, and it's like, wow, can I really do this? And I was like, nah, forget it, So I forgot it, And about 6 months later was when the second event. So the first event was that suicide attempt. The second event was when I woke up one morning and I had blood in my stool. And it scared the wits out of me. And I thought, isn't that funny? Isn't that ironic? All the times I tried to kill myself that I got so scared thinking I was going to die. You know, I was like, that's crazy. It's like, you would think I would have been happy, you know, but I was scared to death. And so that seed that had been planted started coming alive. I had a choice right there. I could have called my medical doctor, but I called my naturopathic friend. And I said, David, I don't know what to do. And he said, Susie, you need to fast for 3 days. I'm like, you're crazy. I can't fast. I'm on medication. I've been on medication 20 years. I got bipolar. I can't do that. I got to be responsible. I got to take my drugs. I just can't do that, David. He said, Susie, I'll be available to you. You can call me. You can call me anytime you want. And you can do this. And you know what? I did. And it was awesome. And that was going on 10 years ago. And I haven't had even an aspirin in 10 years. And my life is totally, totally different. And I'm free. I'm free. I'm free of any fear. I'm free of my past, the nightmares, the stigma. You know, in this country, it's like people with mental illness, major mental illness, they're the lepers of the day. No? I'm not a leper anymore. Miracles do happen, and they do happen. And it's a matter of believing that they can happen.